It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And with me now, the legendary Washington Post reporter and editor Bob Woodward, who rose to fame in the 70s exposing the Watergate scandal and has done investigative journalism often in book-length form ever since. He'll be in New York this weekend for a 92nd Street Y event Sunday night called After the Election, Now What? America's Future and Lessons of Leadership, Bob Woodward in a conversation with Bernie Swain. They both join me now. Bernie Swain is founder of the Washington Speakers Bureau and has represented many prominent people from heads of state on down and has a new book called What Made Me Who I Am, in which people he's represented from Tony Blair to Bob Woodward talk about their influences. Woodward's recent books include The Last of the President's Men, The Price of Politics, Bush at War, Obama's Wars, and many others. Bob, welcome back. And Bernie, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
Bob, because of your books on Bush and Obama at War, I want to ask you first what you think Trump is really going to do about the Middle East. I found him almost wholly contradictory during the campaign, saying on the one hand we have to cut out the military entanglements, and people say he's an isolationist. But on the other hand, he'd bomb the blank out of them and somehow try to seize Iraqi oil fields, which I guess would mean staffing and trooping and defending Iraqi oil fields. Do you have any sense of what kind of Trump war is coming?
Well, we don't know. Trump does not fit in any of the conventional cubby holes, as we know. Is he a conservative? Is he a hawk? We're going to see. And to try to really definitively answer that, I'd rather expound on the creation of the universe, because it's very complicated, and we're now in this transition period where for 10 weeks he's going to get briefings, he's going to make decisions, he's going to pick cabinet officers, White House staff, and so forth, and there are more mysteries than answers.
Do you have any indication who has his ear on ISIS and the Middle East wars and what that roster suggests? For example, we just had Bill McKibben on before you, the environmentalist, who is concerned that the climate denier, as McKibben sees him, Meyer Nobel, is on Trump's environmental transition team. Anybody whose name jumps out at you, who you know, on kind of military or Middle East national security defense
team?
Well,
this former head of Defense Intelligence Agency, General Flynn, who was very much involved in the Trump campaign, is there. But I don't think anyone has a real answer. Bernie Swain knows this well, and it's in his book where there's the story of Colin Powell, who was, of course, chairman of the Joint Chiefs and then Secretary of State. And somebody like Powell has that worldview and is able to be very methodical. If you go back to the first Gulf War, it was really Colin Powell who told President Bush, the senior Bush, when Bush said he wanted to oust Saddam Hussein from Kuwait, which back in 1990 Saddam had invaded, what do you need? Powell said, well, we need 500,000 troops because we want to make sure that we have decisive force. So I wonder whether there would be somebody like Powell who would, I think he's severed his ties. He's made it clear he doesn't respect or like Trump, and lots of Republican national security people have said the same thing.
Bernie, since Bob mentioned the book and that section on Powell, you want to add to that?
Well, I wrote the book because I represented Alex Haley in the 1980s, and Alex said to me, when an old person dies, it's like a library burning. And what he was trying to say was that the experiences in our life are like the pages in a book. And so it's more important now than ever. The question is, will Donald Trump learn from the turning points in his life now that he's president of the United States? Yogi Berra once said, when I reach a fork in the road, which is turning points, I proceed, I go ahead. So the question is, you know, will we go down the right path or will we just go straight ahead, as Yogi said?
Can I ask Bernie a question about that? Because in the Powell section, Powell talks about what is called Banana Kelly, which is the neighborhood he was raised in.
In the Bronx, we know it.
And Powell explicitly in the book says, look, let me tell you what I learned from my neighborhood. Do you remember that, Bernie?
Right. I mean, what he grew up with a lot of different races in Banana Kelly. Now, Kelly was the name of the street, and it was called Banana Kelly because of the shape of a banana. So despite the fact that when he graduated from college, entered the Army, and went to the South and faced a lot of discrimination, that lesson, that turning point of his teenage years living in the Bronx, stayed with him forever. The lesson he learned was that we can all get along no matter who we are, and I've lived it.
Yeah, and that we can live together. And a lot of his friends were Jewish. It was the classic melting pot. And as a young man, he took that lesson and actually practiced it when he worked in the White House and in the Army and as Secretary of State.
Listeners, any questions for Bob Woodward or Bernie Swain? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Bob, one of the big stories in the home stretch of the campaign was WikiLeaks releasing all those John Podesta and related emails. You reported Watergate based largely on anonymous leaks. Do you find them to be journalistically or morally equivalent, more or less, then to now, or not very much?
Well, the WikiLeaks information was supplemental, and there were no real dramatic bombshells in it. It painted a portrait, and it showed that lots of Hillary Clinton's aides didn't really understand her and didn't, there was lots of sniping going on. I think that happens in lots of institutions. But there was nothing in WikiLeaks where somebody came forward and said, hey, look, there's a criminal conspiracy of great magnitude, like in the Watergate story, where eventually when all the Nixon tapes were out, it was very clear this is a criminal enterprise of using all the power of the government to screw and cause problems for Nixon's enemies. And Nixon mobilized the IRS, the CIA, the FBI, you name it. And there's nothing like that.
Right. I guess I'm curious from a journalism standpoint what you think about the WikiLeaks context. I mean, leaks, I don't have to tell you, are usually for the interests of whoever is leaking. Someone leaked the Trump-Billy Bush tape to hurt Trump. We don't know who. Someone leaked to you during Watergate, maybe because they thought they were doing the right thing for the country. Someone leaked the Podesta emails to hurt Clinton. They just leaked it to WikiLeaks instead of the Washington Post. What's the difference?
Well, what you have to do is make sure it's authentic and true, and then you want to ask the question, am I being used? And you're quite right. People who provide information, I don't like to use the word leak. When the New York Times has a good story, that's a leak. When the Washington Post has a good story, it's aggressive, thorough reporting.
Of course.
And the process of reporting is not passive. It's not just a matter of sitting around and waiting for somebody to bring in a grocery cart of documents, as Daniel Ellsberg essentially did in the Pentagon Papers, or somebody like WikiLeaks. You want to go establish relationships of trust with people who can provide you information that comes from the center of power. WikiLeaks is, yes, some of the center of power, but not about the real dramatic decisions of government or, in the case of Hillary Clinton, her campaign.
Bob in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Bob Woodward and Bernie Swain. Hi, Bob.
Yes, hi. How you doing?
Okay.
I have a question for Mr. Woodward.
Uh-huh.
I haven't heard a word about Trump releasing his taxes since he got elected. Now, are any of the papers going to do something? Are anybody going to bring it up? Because What if they finally get his taxes out and they find that there's a lot of stuff in there that would have prevented him from getting elected in the first place? Can he get impeached now, and then does the vice president take over from him?
Well, everyone was unsuccessful in getting his tax returns. The New York Times got a couple of pages in a very important story showing that it's possible Trump did not pay taxes for 20 years. But the whole file, I think, is quite massive. Not only would it include tax returns, but audit reports. As he said, he's under audit. Well, what are the issues? How is this resolved? But I don't think it's going to be any easier to get them now that he's president-elect or when he becomes president.
Well, he always said he would release them when the audit is done. Doesn't an IRS audit have to conclude at some point?
Yes, but there's it's a tricky phrase because, as Trump's tax lawyer has pointed out, they're continual audits, and they may close out, as they did, I think, 5 years in the period 2002 to 2006. And I talked to her, and her name is Sherry Dillon, and talk to Trump. Come on, let's release those. Those audits are done, and he wouldn't do it. And his lawyers were against it because one audit feeds into another audit. It's the same issues and so forth. So I think it's highly possible these audits in the aggregate are never going to be closed out.
Huh. Bernie Swain, since you're appearing with Bob at the 92nd Street Y on Sunday night at this event called After the Election, Now What? America's Future and Lessons of Leadership. Bob Woodward in conversation with Bernie Swain. I wonder if you want to do a little dry run, and I'd be curious to hear what you would like to hear from Bob right now about the after-the-election climate. Do you have a question for him you'd like to ask while he's...
Well, the book I wrote was about turning points, which means you get to a fork in the road and you go in one direction. Now, we don't always make good decisions, so we may go down the wrong road or the right road, but if we go down the wrong road, we discover the mistake we made and we learn from it. And so that's what the book is about. I'd be interested to Bob to give an example. Bob learned to... was inspired to be an investigative journalist, actually being a janitor. And it might be interesting to the audience for him to just briefly tell that story.
Oh, I never should have told that story because I was in high school. I was a janitor in my father's law firm. And you go in at night and you start not only cleaning, but you look at what's on the desk, and there were interesting papers. And I discovered that they had disposed files in the attic of the law office. And lots of people I knew in high school or in this small town, Wheaton, Illinois, had cases and files there. And what it showed in a very clear and glaring way is that these people in this town who you thought were perfect, they had issues, they had tax cases, ugly divorces, arrests, investigations, grand juries, secret tape recordings, all of the stuff that we still see in reporting these days. So it was a good lesson that, quite frankly, don't take people on the surface. Don't focus on just what they say, but you've got to dig into what they really did and what's in the disposed files. What are in the disposed files of Donald Trump? We have some of it. At the Post, 20 reporters did a book called Trump Revealed, which really has a lot of material if you want to understand who Trump is. It's as good a book as any. My worry is there are parts that are still in the attic, in other words, that we don't know about him. And as suggested, his tax returns are a very good example of that.
Giovanni in Bed-Stuy, you're on WNYC with Bob Woodward and Bernie Swain. Hi, Giovanni.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I just want to make this comment and hear what your guests have to say about. As I look back and address the question as to who Trump is and the road he's going back, it seems to me, as I review him, he's an amalgam of some past political figures. Teddy Roosevelt, in my view. Franklin Roosevelt, in my view, because he's proposing a version of the New Deal that is the Good Deal, but it incorporates a lot of the concept of what's doing the best for the common man, who I think is the foundation of his support, and the feistiness of Harry Truman. He certainly is not Dwight Eisenhower. He's not Richard Nixon. He's not President Ford, nor the two Bushes in his overall view, and a little bit of Ronald Reagan in his appeal to the common man. And I think it's noteworthy that he reaches out to Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer to bring him into and seek their views and cooperation with them. Because I believe when it comes down to everything that he's all about, he has more in common with them than with Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell, who are just looking for their political survival and maybe trying to influence Donald Trump as a everyday Republican, which I don't think he is.
Interesting, Giovanni. I don't know if that's too hopeful, Bob.
Yeah, given... I was going to say it's very optimistic. Bernie, if you were doing Trump and asking him to relate, as you have in this book, what made him who he is, what do you think he would say?
Well, I'm not sure he knows. I mean, part of finding a turning point in your life is learning from that turning point. And as Yogi said, you know, when you come to a fork in the road, you just take it. And maybe he's just taken too many forks in the road and doesn't quite understand yet who he is. It's going to be very interesting to see, you know, because a lot of people say he's really a Democrat. And so it's going to be interesting to see whether he drives the Republican Party back to the center by accident and ends up doing good. So he may discover as president of the United States exactly who he is for the very first time.
What's fascinating about all of this is as you look at Trump as president-elect, here is somebody who's been on the public stage for decades, most of it as a casino and hotel and golf course baron, and now he's got this job.
And he named his son Baron.
That's right. But the extraordinary power he's going to have as president, and I agree with Bernie that if you look at the campaign that we've just gone through, Hillary Clinton, Trump, they came on the scene, they announced they're running, and we've learned a lot about them. I look at this as a reporter, we haven't learned enough, particularly about Trump. What's inside there? What's driving him? What's his evaluation? It's going to be one of, I was saying this morning on a television show that you can reduce all this to one word, Trump quake, because he is a political earthquake in this country and in the world. And I'd like to have Bernie get with him and kind of say, why don't you do a little tell-all on, though Trump has written books, and he never quite, at least my reading of them, got to the center of describing, as Bernie lays out in the book, the turning points. What was the big event?
We will find out, I guess, in office, how whatever those turning points are affect him and affect all the people of the United States of America. Bernie Swain's book is called What Made Me Who I Am, in which people from Tony Blair to Bob Woodward to Colin Powell and beyond talk about their influences, and they will be together at a 92nd Street Y event on Sunday night called After the Election. Bernie Swain and Bob Woodward from the Washington Post. After the Election, Now What? America's Future and the Lessons of Leadership. Bob Woodward in conversation with Bernie Swain. Thank you very much for having some of the related conversation here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, If you're from Europe, you probably know my next guest. If from the United States, maybe not. But he's been called the Elvis of philosophy and the most prominent living Marxist philosopher. He's from Slovenia, and he endorsed Donald Trump for president. We'll talk to Slavoj Žižek next. Stay with us.